Heavenly Father, you have entrusted this message to me to bring across to your people, the people that you died for, the people that you love. So I dedicate my words to you and the thoughts of my heart, that you might find them acceptable in your sight. Greetings, saints. Our reading is 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24 to 27, TPT. Isn't it obvious that all runners on the racetrack keep on running to win? But only one receives the victor's prize. Yet each one of you must run the race to be victorious. A true athlete will be disciplined in every respect, practicing constant self-control in order to win a laurel wreath that quickly withers. But we run our race to win a victor's crown that will last forever. For that reason, I don't run just for exercise or box like one throwing aimless punches. But I train like a champion athlete. I subdue my body and get it under my control, so that after preaching the good news to others, I myself won't be disqualified. So living the life of a child of God is compared to running a race. Now, I'm not much of a runner, I'm more of a paddler, so I'll compare it to paddling a canoe race. In the Berg River Canoe Marathon, it's a four-day race where people paddle for about 240 kilometers over 4 days. Four consecutive days. Now, I have entered the Berg River Canoe Marathon and completed it 3 times. Well, I entered 4 times. I didn't complete last year. But I have a fitness level which made me able to complete the course. However, there are some paddlers that are more serious than myself who are in it to win. And they paddle hard, they paddle fast, they've got an excellent technique. My technique is good most of the time, but sometimes I fall back into not such a good technique. But if you are really serious about winning a race, then you will train hard. You will spend hours, days, months, in fact, training to become fit and to tone your muscles and build up your stamina so that you can not only paddle for 4 days, but that you can paddle well and paddle at a good pace. Now, in a race in the human realm, in the physical realm, there's only one winner. In the spiritual realm, every believer that completes is a winner. Even in the Berg River Canoe Marathon, every person who completes the Berg gets a medal. Yes, there are podium positions for the winners, people who came in first, second and third, amongst the men, amongst the women. But every competitor is seen as being victorious. So you don't have to sit there thinking, well, I'm not as good as somebody else, therefore I'm not going to win the race to heaven. The race to heaven is a race against the odds, just like a marathon. You are battling against tree blocks, against rocks, rapids, against little channels that go off to the side, and if you go down that channel you get lost and you spend an hour trying to get back to the main river. In fact, the one time I got out the river and went down on land, I positioned myself by the sun. I said, okay, I must head in that direction along the river so I can get closer to the end point. And got into the river later on after I'd got past where the channels were going all over the place and carried on paddling. The thing is that in the Christian walk, in the walk of a child of God, you need to be as dedicated as the one who wants to win. The person that wants to win the Berg River Canoe Marathon puts in a lot of practice, a lot of training, a lot of maybe even gym work to build up the muscles, build up the stamina, build up the body's capability to push so hard for 4 consecutive days. At a decent pace so that you can win. And that is what this is about. What he's saying here is that each and every single one of God's children should put in the effort so that we can build our spiritual muscles, so that we can grow our faith, so that we can become more like Jesus. We can walk in his footsteps. He is the biggest, best example we can follow. So when we follow Jesus, we are doing it not just to pass the time of day. We are doing it to achieve the end result, to achieve the victor's crown of doing what He wants us to do. When God expects us to do something, He gives us the ability to do that. And you don't have to be amazingly strong to do what God expects you to do. In fact, in 2 Corinthians 12 verse 9, it says, "But He has said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you. My loving kindness and my mercy are more than enough, always available, regardless of the situation. For my power is being perfected and is completed and shows itself most effectively in your weakness. Therefore, I will all the more gladly boast in my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may completely enfold me and may dwell in me.'" So it's not your own power, your own strength. A paddler on the Berg River canoe marathon has to rely on the strength that he has built up in his body, or she has built up in her body, to complete the marathon. But God gives us His strength to do the marathon that He expects us to take part in. It's called life. It's called living on planet Earth. And the victor's crown, the prize, isn't just a medal, isn't just stuff that we get at the end of the race. It's eternity. It's a beautiful mansion in heaven. And wow, there isn't any race that I know of on this planet that offers a mansion as its prize. All we have to do is do something with the faith that God has given us. There is a parable in the Gospels. I'll give you a summary of Matthew 25, 14 to 19. I'm not going to read the whole thing. A master gave business funds to 3 servants before his travels. Servant 1 took a risk and doubled what he had. Servant 2 took a risk and doubled what he had. Servant 3 did not risk it and hid what he had. Then the master returned and asked that they report back. I'm just going to highlight the master's replies to these 3 servants. The reply to servant 1 is in Matthew 25:21. The master was full of praise. "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together." The reply to servant 2 is in Matthew 25, verse 23. The master said, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount. So now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together." The reply to servant 3 is in Matthew 25, verse 26 to 30. But the master replied, "You wicked and lazy servant. If you knew I harvested crops I didn't plant and gathered crops I didn't cultivate, why didn't you deposit my money in the bank? At least I could have gotten some interest on it." Then he ordered, "Take the money from the servant and give it to the one with the 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. Now throw this useless servant into outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now we know there's no weeping in heaven, so guess what? That's a bad place to be, where this servant was thrown. And why is it such a drastic result? Because that servant did not show faith in a master, faith in God. The 3 servants in the parable were given funds by the master, and God gives us faith. This is shown in Romans 12, verse 3. I'm going to read verse 1 to 3, NKJV. "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. For I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." So no one has any excuse. You can't say, "Oh, well, God didn't give me anything to do his work with." God gives each one a measure of faith, just like he gave each servant funds for business. An example of faith in action is in James 2, verse 14 to 18. "What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone? Suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing, and you say, 'Goodbye and have a good day. Stay warm and eat well.' but then you don't give that person any food or clothing. What good does that do? So you see, faith by itself isn't enough. Unless it produces good deeds, it is dead and useless. Now someone may argue, some people have faith, others have good deeds. But I say, how can you show me your faith if you don't have good deeds? I will show you my faith by my good deeds. And so while it is true that you cannot earn your salvation, there is nothing you can do to make yourself get to heaven, because Jesus has died the death, he's given the sacrifice of himself to purchase your salvation. But once you are a child of God, you are expected to behave like a child of God. And that is sharing God's love with those around you. It goes on in James 2, verse 19 to 23. You say you have faith, for you believe that there is one God. Good for you. Even the demons believe this, and they tremble in terror. How foolish! Can't you see that faith without good deeds is useless? Don't you remember that our ancestor Abraham was shown to be right with God by his actions when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see, his faith and his actions worked together. His actions made his faith complete. And so it happened just as the scriptures say. Abraham believed God, and God counted him as righteous because of his faith. He was even called the friend of God. So you and I are also friends of God because we have faith in him. So we need to obey God when he asks us to do stuff. As Abraham obeyed God when he was asked to sacrifice Isaac. And of course Isaac had to be a willing young man because he was a strong, strapping young 20, 30 year old, somewhere around there. Not a little child, because guess what? Abraham was a fully grown man, but he was kind of old. And yet the pile of wood was placed on Isaac's shoulders. Why? Because he was a strong young man. And so he had to be willing to get onto that altar. If Isaac had not been willing to be sacrificed, it would not have happened, because Isaac was probably stronger than Abraham, just in pure youth and physical strength. So when Abraham sacrificed Isaac, Isaac had to be willing to be that sacrifice. Just like Jesus on the cross had to be willing. That's why he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, not my will, but your will be done. And that's when he asked God to take away that cup of suffering, the pending crucifixion. But he wanted God's will to be done, because he knew that God's will meant the whole of humanity, that's including you, including me, would be able to be saved, subject to the choice of every person to accept that free gift of salvation. Just like a marriage relationship is something that the marriage partners have to work at on an ongoing basis, to show that agape love that puts the other person above themselves. So, with our salvation, we need to work at it. We cannot work for it. We cannot earn our salvation. But once we've got that salvation, we need to obey our Heavenly Father, who expects us to be the hands and feet of Jesus on planet Earth and to reach out to the lost and hurting around us. Philippians 2, verse 12 to 13 in Amplified says, "So then, my dear ones, just as you have always obeyed my instructions with enthusiasm, not only in my presence but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation, that is, cultivate it, bring it to full effect, actively pursue spiritual maturity with awe-inspired fear and trembling, using serious caution and critical self-evaluation to avoid anything that might offend God or discredit the name of Christ. For it is not your strength, but it is God who is effectively at work in you, both to will and to work, that is, strengthening, energizing, and creating in you the longing and the ability to fulfill your purpose for his good pleasure." So his purpose for you when you were born again, your purpose was not only to spend eternity in heaven, but that is your purpose. But your other purpose before the grave, or before Jesus returns, is to reach out to others, to encourage other believers, to reach out to people that don't know Jesus. Yes, you are born again, not only for heaven, but to walk this planet Earth as a shining light. In Philippians 2, verse 14 to 16, it goes on, "Do everything without murmuring or questioning the providence of God, so that you may prove yourselves to be blameless and guileless, innocent and uncontaminated, children of God without blemish in the midst of a morally crooked and spiritually perverted generation, among whom you are seen as bright lights, beacons shining out clearly in the world of darkness, holding out and offering to everyone the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to rejoice greatly, because I did not run my race in vain, nor labor without result." And so it is every worker's desire, it was Paul's desire, and it is every worker's desire, that the people that they are encouraging will step up to the plate, run their race faithfully, as if they want to win. Remember, everyone who completes is a winner. So we want to win, we want to discipline our body, we want to make the effort, and we want to not be lazy spiritually and not ignore other people who are in pain out there. Let's reach out to those people around us who need the love of Jesus more than they need the oxygen that they breathe. And we're not doing this for a hand clap or congratulations. We're doing this for the love that we have, the love that we are loving our Heavenly Father back. Our Father loves us and we love Him back. In Luke 17 verse 10 it says, "So you too, when you have done everything that was assigned and commanded you, say, 'We are unworthy servants, undeserving of praise or reward, for we have not gone beyond our obligation. We have merely done what we ought to do.'" And so we're not doing this to feel stuck up about anything. We are not doing this for a pat on the back. We are doing this because we are loving God back. Because of His great love for us, that is why we love Him back, and that's why we do what we do. Paul, at the end of his life, said it in 2 Timothy 4 verse 7, "I have fought the good and worthy and noble fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith, firmly guarding the gospel against error." So I encourage you to fight the fight, to run the race, and to shine your light.